Read me romance. Read, read me romance. Read me romance. Read, read me romance.
You could take a look in a book, that's fine. Or you could sit back, relax, and unwind and
read me romance. Read, read me romance.
Are you into bad guys? Billie Eilish has had a song, The Bad Guys, at the top of the charts for the past few weeks. But I have to say, she may have taken a page out of Celia Aaron's book, conveniently entitled The Bad Guys. It's about a psychopath. Not kidding. He's a psycho who falls in love, think Dexter, but romantic if obsessive one. The thing I like best about this book is that he isn't a nice guy to anybody but the heroine. To her, he's a beast and a prince all in one. And the best thing of all, you can get the book right now for 99 cents. You can grab it up on all platforms. Go and get it, guys. Apple, Amazon, everywhere you can think of. I love this one.
Hey, lady listeners.
Welcome to Friday.
Welcome to Friday.
Why is male birth control not a thing?
Yeah, okay.
Go.
We were talking about that before we clicked in because Tessa was like, by the time my kid's this age, they'll have this. And I was like, by the time my kid's 18, I hope they have male birth control.
Why don't they? Why don't they have male birth control? But here's
the thing. If you
I know why they don't.
Let's say you met a guy at a bar. You go home with him and he's like, it's all good. I'm on birth control. Would you believe his ass?
Oh, God.
No, it's not about that, though. I just want my kids to be able to have birth control. So I don't have to worry about it.
Both kids? Yeah, so you don't have to worry about it. But you're saying at 18, at that point, maybe it's too late.
Well, I mean, if they had it, I would put it on him whenever.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do this.
I mean, not something that, like, makes it so you can't like perform, not no. Like male castration, like
you just want to kill the sperm. Sperm,
yeah
something that heats it up.
Because it honestly up. Like let's say with the exception of the heroes from your books, men don't necessarily all want to get women pregnant, like they don't really want to do that, like generally, so I don't see like a
but
lot
I do
of
think
men being opposed to it.
If they don't have a condom, they're like, I'm doing this anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, they might not be smart about
but
it.
I just see being in a scenario where you meet a guy and you're like, you go back, whatever, you decide to get your groove on, like, to each their own.
You both should be on birth control.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Let's say the woman's on birth control, but she's like, hey, you got a condom. He's like, no, it's cool. I'm on the pill.
Yeah, but that doesn't protect you from an STD.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I wouldn't trust a guy like that far.
Oh no, to be like, I just want it for his own.
I'm just thinking of like responsible couples,
okay.
Maybe that don't.
Oh,
that's
okay.
What I want.
Right,
I
that
want,
makes sense.
I don't want to be a grandma, is what I'm saying. That's why I want male birth control.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I get it.
No, I mean, I totally understand.
Because
you know,
he shouldn't believe some girl that's like, I'm on birth control.
Yeah.
Same way.
Yeah, true. True. We know, and it was weird, too, because I knew a guy who was a friend who I wasn't involved in at all, but he was with a girl, and they broke up, and he got with somebody new, and like a month later, the old girlfriend was like, I'm pregnant. And he's like, there's no way. He said, I wore a condom every single time because he was like, I knew she was crazy. He was like, you know, it was fun, but I knew she was crazy. And he was like, I purposely like wore condoms every single time. And I'm like, you should still get that DNA test. And so he did. Boom. He was the father.
Wow.
Like, yeah, I know. And it was just like, I mean, I don't know. I guess you just never know, no matter what you do. But I would think, you know, putting a guy on a pill along with, you know, using a condom obviously would be the best case scenario. But I also see guys using that as sort of a lazy
excuse. Look, it can't hurt. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, what's it going to hurt?
How many accidents is this going to help us avoid? Probably a good percentage, right?
Yeah. But you got to think, too, you know, this is also men making these laws or developing this, passing this science.
Why everything's
so they're not,
bollocks.
Yeah, so it's not going to happen. They don't want to fuck with their dicks.
Yeah. No, anything that might affect my dick. Yeah, anything that might affect my dick in any way.
I'm not, who's going to be the guinea pig for this to see if it works or not?
They think everything is going to make their dick fall off. I think that's like the ultimate fear.
That's how they make decisions, based on their dicks falling off.
Yeah. That's got to be in the Declaration of Independence somewhere. Like, heretofore, nobody shall maketh my dick possibly
I know, right?
fall off. All right. So we're here for Annabelle Joseph week. We're here.
It's Friday.
We're super excited. I think we probably left you about to get
begging for more of
Definitely Kinky. So we'll get to that in a little while. Do you guys read a lot of BDSM, or have you read a lot of BDSM in the past? Do you have a book recommendation for a BDSM book that you really like?
I was always in the Shadowlands.
Charisse Sinclair.
I think everybody was.
So Charisse Sinclair, if you go to the top recommendations on Goodreads for BDSM, Charisse Sinclair is like she's got like all top 10 recommendations pretty much, like below 50 Shades.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you're looking to dip your toe in, I think Charisse Sinclair is a really good place to start. Club Shadowlands.
Yeah, I agree.
If you haven't read 50 Shades of Grey, I mean, I'll just throw that out there. That's one. If you haven't read
50 Shades of Grey,
get on it. It's really good.
A lot of people hate on it, but I read all four. Wait, three books or four books? Shit.
Well, there's four because you have Grey.
Okay, but I only read three. So I read the three books, and then I immediately, in the middle of the night, when I finished the third book, went back to the beginning and started. Because I couldn't live in, I couldn't get out of that world. I couldn't leave that world.
I know. I didn't want to leave the world. That's how I felt with Twilight,
I did the same thing with Twilight. I reread all four books as well.
I think I reread 50 Shades probably six times. And I can see, like, it's great, you know, to look back at my Kindle and you can see when you first started downloading books. And I can see, like, 50 Shades. I think the second book was, like, the first one I ever downloaded on my Kindle because I wanted it right then. And I had just gotten an e-reader for Christmas. And so that was the first book I downloaded. And I read it and it's, like, the second book. And then all these other, like, BDSM books after that. And I just went on, like, this huge
binge. I know. I remember, like, just being, like, where do I go from here? And downloading J.K. Kenner and Megan Hart.
I definitely read J. Kenner.
Maya Banks. She had like the Sweet series.
The Sweet series for Maya Banks. I read that, and then
those all have audios to them too.
God, love J. Kenner. Oh my God, those books.
The Stark series is like still going.
It's still like, yeah. She's still putting out books. She's still
from the Stark series.
Sylvia Day.
Oh God. Fucking, oh my God. Gideon. I was obsessed with that series. I remember this part from that book that I always think about, where like they've, so like, just so you know, like it's a, if you haven't read the, Crossfire series by Sylvia Day, it's, you know, very fraught. Like they're constantly breaking up and getting back together and but they're like dead in love with each other. And he's obsessed with her. And there's a scene where like they've broken up and she like cuts her hair and she like gets a new, she just kind of like goes, makes an effort like to like update her style. Different. And they get in this, they climb into the same elevator at his building. And he's like, face the wall. I can't even look at you. You're so beautiful. I can't look at you. It hurts too bad. And he makes her face the wall.
God, you're making me want to go read it again. I forgot about that scene. Oh my God.
And he's like, wait for me. Remember that? He's like, just fucking wait. He's like, there's things happening you don't know, you're not aware of. Just wait and be patient. And I was just like, I'm going to go back in. I think I might go back in.
Shit, I know. I swear to God, you're making me want to read it so bad. The sex in those books
was so insane. Oh, so like, good. They were both abuse victims. And so, like, he controlled his abuse by dominating, and she can't be dominated. And so, like, there were scenes where, like, he woke up from a nightmare and he was, like, attacking her. And so, like, they had to sleep in separate beds, and it was just... It's like there was actual real conflict, just really good conflict, and I just can't recommend that
more. It's so tumultuous, like it's just all the
go feels. Read the Crossfire series because all the books are out. Like there's no cliffhangers. Like there was cliffhangers when those books were coming out.
At the time. Oh fuck me! I was like book one, I read it, and then I got to book two, and I realized it was a cliffhanger, and we're gonna have to wait a year for like the next book to come out. And I was like, fuck off! Like it was so. I don't think I read past the third book though, because at that point it was like she had signed a deal for like three more books in the series, and I was like, I can't wait this long. It's killing me.
Yeah, but they're out now, so go read it. And I remember, I think it was, like, right around the time I just became a published author, which is going to be 7 years this next year, going down into the New York City subway, and there being a giant fucking ad on the subway wall for Sylvia Day and being like, this is big. I just remember thinking, this is huge. Like, romance author is being advertised, like, in a place where major corporations advertise. And it just making me feel really legit just to be in that world. Like, I'm like, we sign at the same signings. Like, obviously, we're not at the same level, but it was so cool at the time to be like, it just made me feel proud to be a part of romance, so.
Yeah, it still does.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I was trying to think, so BDSM, I actually read the R.K. Lily series, Up in the Air. I don't know if any, that's the first book, I think, is called Up in the
What's
Air.
What's it about?
In Flight. It's Up in the Air series. The first book is In Flight. And I think about it every time I get on a plane. It is about a flight attendant, and she is, like, it's a late flight, and she's with this guy, and, or she's, like, waiting on this guy and the head of the airline. And this guy, she finds out his name's James Cavendish, and they're talking. And I guess they're talking about, like, a merger or something like that, or James is, like, looking to buy them or invest or something. And so, like, she was the flight attendant that was chosen to be on this flight to take care of them. And so afterwards, like, he just obsesses about her. He is so fucking obsessed. And there's a lot of BDSM to it, but it's really hot and it's emotional. And I love that she's really independent in this book. Like, she has her own place. She lives in Vegas. And, you know, she has this best friend, that Steven, that's with her, that's a flight attendant too. And, you know, they have such a great relationship. Like you were talking about the other day with The Secret, like, in that book, you know, it's not just a great romance, it's a great friendship. And, like, her and Steven are bonded together because they were, like, in foster care together. And it's like, there's all these, it's really beautiful, like, the connections in the book. And it's just dirty and hot. And, like, that whole series is out now, too. So, if you, that was another one I had to wait for that I felt like I was going to die. But, I think it's three books. And then she has a bonus book called Mr. Beautiful, which is about the hero and kind of, like, his beginning. So, but, yeah, it's really, really. And there's a lot of, like, fun, kind of dangerous stuff that happens, too. And he's got, like, this crazy ex. And, you know, it's all this fun stuff that happens in it. But he's just, the bottom line is, he is fucking obsessed. I'd never read a book where the hero was so obsessed and so devoted before. And it just, it made me lose my mind.
Okay, good. That's a good, I'm writing down all these series as well and all these books that we're talking about. And so if you look in the episode description, I'll make sure they're in there. And also post them in headquarters when this.
I want to look in my Kindle too. Like, I'm going to go back now and just see real quick. Like, I'm going to scroll all the way down and see. But The Shadowlands was another one where I read those.
Wicked Ties by Shayla Black is a really good, really good BDSM book.
The Shayla Black and the Shayla Black, Lexi Blake, they had that whole series. Fuck, what is it? I'm going to have to look it up because I know I've got them all. It's like The Dom Who Loved Me.
Yeah.
Oh, they're Virgin Captive. They have the Menage ones. It's all BDSM Menages. Oh, God, what is this? Masters of Menage.
Masters of Menage. Okay. Yeah.
But there is that other one, The Dom Who Loved Me. That was the security one or something, I think, right?
I don't know. But this right? Wicked Ties one is a bodyguard, and the heroine's being stalked.
That's it.
She's a talk show host, and she's being stalked, and her bodyguard, is the hero. Yeah.
I remember that one. Okay. Because this one I've got, I just looked it up. It's The Dom Who Loved Me by Lexi Blake and the Men with the Golden Cuffs. That was by Lexi Blake too. So that was another one, like the BDSM ones that she had in that series.
If you're looking for some male BDSM, I can recommend For Real by Alexis Hall. That's a very good book, and the age difference is... one of the heroes is 40 and the other one's 19. So, like, the 40-year-old's kind of burnt out, and this 19-year-old, like, replenishes his, like, lust for life. Definitely, if you're looking for male BDSM, I would recommend that one for sure.
My other one that I would recommend is called, it's an anthology, but it's only three authors, and it's Sierra Cartwright, Cherie Sinclair, and Belinda McBride. It's called The Doms of Darkhaven. There's two books in that. There's Doms of Darkhaven, Book 1 and Book 2. And all three of the stories kind of coincide. And they're all shorter stories. And they're all in this, like, It's like a trilogy, but it's been by three different authors, and it's been bundled. So just look up The Doms of Darkhaven, and it just got Charisse Sinclair, who we've already mentioned, does BDSM, and then Sierra Cartwright, who does amazing BDSM. I've talked about her before on the podcast. She has that series, the Danger Zone series, and I think we're actually maybe going to have her next season on the podcast. Yeah. So fingers crossed if she can get us in her busy schedule.
I emailed with her this morning, so I think she's good.
Oh, yeah. Did you? Okay, good. Okay, good. Oh, and the other on the Shyla Black and Lexi Blake, the Masters of Menage, the other one I love was their Virgin Concubine, which I just thought was so fucking good. I love that one so much. I was just really like scrolling back through and I'm like, God, I love that book. That was amazing. So
okay. Awesome. Let's see. I have a listener email that is really important that I would like to read. So it's a little emotional, but I feel like it's really important. Oh, wow. It's an important one. So I'm going to read it. Okay. Hi, lady DJs and lady listeners. This is going to be long. Sorry. It's not that long. I'm not going to lie. I'm so scared to write this email. I've been wanting to write y'all for so long. This night I just said, fuck it. And now I'm here. So many people open their emails with that line about they were so scared to write in. And I'm like, really? I love getting emails. Like, please don't be.
Yeah,
if
for
you
sure.
want to get anything off your chest or off your heart, like, you should just write us because we like it and we want to hear from you. I'm in high school. And as a high schooler, it's very uncommon to know people who like reading romance. So this podcast makes me feel like I'm not the only one who likes reading romance. I just want to say thank you guys so much for making this podcast. You guys have helped me so much these past few months. I'm 5'4" and 117 pounds. I used to hate my body. I don't feel pretty at all. And being a Black woman only made it worse. You see, I used to be boy crazy. If a boy called me pretty, then I was pretty. If a boy called me ugly, then I was ugly. I depended on boys to make me feel good about myself. People at school would also make fun of my race, including those boys I was crazy over. Ugh, it just hurts me in my heart. I've been through so much racism in my life that's something I'm used to. I was also going through a lot of shit at school for my body. I'm in 8th grade. I grew C-cup boobs overnight, and I also started to get a butt. Boys would talk about touching me and having sex with me and doing really bad things in bed with me. I hated it. I felt like it was my fault, which made me hate my body even more. When I first found this podcast, I was in a dark place. I wanted to end my life. I thought that no one was going to love and want to be with me, and that guys only saw me for my body and nothing else. This podcast changed everything for me. Listening to three amazing, beautiful women talk about loving yourself and not giving a crap about other people who try to bring you down is a game changer. I'm a freshman now, and I walk the hallways like I own the place. I'm gonna, like, cry.
I know.
It's because of you guys that I have found confidence in myself. It's funny now because ever since I changed, I've had boys ask me out, and I said no. I've even crushing on a boy that is super nice to me and likes me for me and not my body. I'm sorry if this is so long, but I just wanted to tell y'all how much I love you guys and how much this podcast has changed my life. Please keep up the good work. P.S. Mel, it's so weird to me that your daughter is only 13. I'm 14. It makes me want to be friends with her.
Aw, that's so sweet.
So I just wanted to read this because, first of all, I think it's really important for us to remember what our children are going through, our daughters especially, at that age. And, like, sometimes they don't think they talk about it. And they're going through this thing at school where boys think it's okay to, and they try to impress their friends by saying really hurtful things to girls about their body. I don't think that a lot of times... And I know my daughter's in this boat. They think that they don't want to tell us. They don't want to tell their parents because they're afraid of it hurting their parents. They're afraid of drawing attention to what they think are weaknesses in themselves to their parents because they want their parents to be proud of them. They want their parents to think they're doing great and that
they're embarrassed.
And so I think it took a lot of courage.
That is so embarrassing.
It took a lot of courage for... this young lady to write this email, and I just wanted to tell her that, and it sounds like she already knows it from listening to the podcast, but this is such a small, it seems huge right now. Everything seems so huge at 13, and it seems like you're just never going to get out of this pattern of boys being shitty and you feeling shitty and you being like, however your day goes at school, it's just like everything hinges on an interaction with a girl that you want to be friends with or a boy that you like. It just everything, how you feel, hinges all on these little things, but it does get better. It's only a small part of your life that you just won't see that until you get older.
Like we just said, we couldn't even remember school. We were like, I don't remember.
I know. Yeah. Like, I don't remember anything.
Yeah. But I do remember having boobs very early and boys saying things about them and just having like cellulite early and boys pointing it out and just how bad it made me feel to the point where, you know, you just don't want to go to school, you don't want to leave your house. I understand that. And it, you know,
and to also answer her too, I mean, and we're, this is coming from three white women.
I want to mention that it's also doubling down on how hard this is because she's dealing with racism.
Because she's a young black woman. Yeah. She's not only dealing with racism, but she's dealing with, you know, being a black woman in maturing and how that has affected her life, you know, all of this and, you know, and how people interact around her because of it. Like, you know, it's we can all identify what it's like to be a young woman and to be uncomfortable and not know your body yet and not be comfortable in your skin yet. And that takes a long time.
Before
you're just like, fuck it. But you know what though? Your generation's growing up with Lizzo. Like, I'm telling you right now, if I would have had Lizzo when I was 14, I would be president right now. Like,
I saw a meme yesterday that said, I don't need a therapist, I have Lizzo. I don't know if I totally, like, that's not 100% agreement with that.
I'm having a crappy day. Leah sends me a Lizzo song.
I'm like, just do this.
That's the attitude that we need to have, though. Honestly, absolutely. That is the attitude that we need to have of, I'm doing me, and fuck you if you don't like it. And if you got something to say, say it to my fucking back, because I'm walking away. I don't have anything to do with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't have any time for this bullshit.
Yeah, and it took me, I'm 35, and I'm just getting comfortable with my body. I'm just getting comfortable not giving a fuck what people think or say. You know, it's a long time in coming, but like Leah said, it's going to come earlier for your generation. And
yeah, I think so. I truly believe that, you know, for you guys, it's going to be, she's paving the way with gold bricks. I'm telling you, she's such a phenomenal powerhouse. I saw something yesterday that she had tweeted where somebody said, Lizzo is my spirit animal. And she said, that's disparaging to indigenous people and what they believe. And she was like, it's cool if you think I'm awesome though.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow. Like that hit me. Like I never thought of it that way either. Like to say like spirit animal. And she's like, no, just, you know, indigenous people believe that that's a real thing. And she was like, let's just say I'm cool. You know, and I was just like, oh wow, damn. Yeah. Like Lizzo's just educating everyone in the nicest way. But I also believe, like, you know, and that's something that we really started the podcast on too, is that we wanted, you know, authors of color and women of color to be represented and, you know, to have their voices heard. For, you know, for a long time in romance, I think those voices were just kind of filtered out. And I think it's such an amazing change at least for me to see, you know, I see so many more authors of color that are coming forward that are, you know, being promoted, that are having success. And I think, like, you know, as white women, I think we have a responsibility in this industry to lift them up. And I feel like, you know, if there's other young 14-year-old women who are listening to this, you know, I think it's your responsibility as well to lift young women of color up and to not make them feel alone and to support each other. And so I feel like that's what our purpose is right now. And as women, you know, together to lift each other up, especially those that are marginalized.
It's good. Yeah. It's just important to remember that there are a lot of people that maybe suffer in silence around us at all times, and we need to try and recognize it more and reach out to them, because you don't know how much it can mean. Just like talking to somebody.
I tell my daughter that all the time when she says sometimes, she's like, God, such and such is such an asshole. And I'm like, there's probably something going on in their lives that you just don't know. Yeah. And you need to step back and think. And I try to remind her all the time of how when she responds to people, that she needs to be respectful and she doesn't know what's happening. It's just like they don't know what's happening in her life. to be aware of other students.
But it's just, you know, and also I feel like this is a swing in the tides as well, just that, you know, like Maya Angelou said, when you know better, do better. And I feel like right now we know better, so we should be doing better. That's true. So I love this email, and it just, like, I wasn't planning on crying on this podcast today.
I knew I was going really to beautiful. When I read it, because I saw it last week, yeah. And I was like, oh my God, I just can't wait to say, I can't wait to talk to her directly, the three of us.
Yeah.
Because you're doing great, you're going to do great things, mm-hmm. And
we're right here. We're right here.
And if, you know, like, even if, you know, romance is there for you too. It's like, absolutely, you know,
always.
It is. Someone said to me this week, like, why is romance have such a strong voice right now? And I was like, romance has always had a strong voice.
Where have you been?
It is never, it has always been an anchor for people. And it's just that we're now taking ownership of what we like, and we're not afraid to say what we like anymore. And our online communities are making it easier for us to
louder.
Do that. Yeah. We have support. Yeah. We see support. We have
a presence.
Right. And I think that...
Romance, let me tell you, romance has gotten me through some of the hardest times in my life. Like, depression, anxiety, like, and, you know, at any time I've felt sad or, you know, when I've struggled in the past, it's just, romance is always there. It's right there at my fingertips, and it makes me feel better.
Yeah. And I know we should probably address that a 13-year-old, 14-year-old girl, it's definitely the content of this podcast is a little mature, but I'm not going to tell anybody if you don't.
But I don't think, I don't think anybody that's in high school isn't.
I know.
Especially after what she said.
After what she said about boys say to her.
Yeah, I just felt like I had to be responsible and address it. But.
Well, it calls back to what we talked about on Monday, where it's like, you know, you shouldn't be shamed for what you like and what you feel. And, you know, it's, you know, these, like, some topics might be a bit mature, but the way she feels is the way these people feel, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they're, you know, it's like when people tell you, like, oh, you're young, you don't know what love is. Like, I don't believe that, because that's like telling somebody that, you know, their sadness isn't the same as your sadness. Sad is sad, you know, want is want, need is need. And those things, you feel love, you know, even at a young age. It might not have the depth of a relationship that's lasted 20 years because you haven't been there yet. But that doesn't mean that your feelings don't feel just as hard.
Yeah, I started reading romance at 14, so yeah, I definitely, same. And I didn't feel like, it felt like, oh, this is finally something that is speaking to me. So it definitely wasn't a shock to me. It wasn't, I mean, it probably would have been a shock to my mom to know I was reading it. But and also, I just want to say one last thing about this is that, you know, if you're feeling like you want to end your life or you're feeling really down, go talk to somebody. There are people that care. Yeah. And sometimes it doesn't seem like it, especially when you're 13 and adults are always telling you what to do and how to feel and what you should be doing and how you should be acting. But there are counselors that are there that you should seek out if you need them. If maybe this podcast misses a week and don't be afraid as well to talk to your parents about how you feel, because sometimes we're just dumb and we're preoccupied and we miss it and we don't know. Yeah, and we've all been there. So I just want to thank her again for writing in. It was really brave of you. And let's all talk to our kids about how to reach out to their peers and how to be kind, and also about racism that should be talked about. And it shouldn't be something that we shy away from, because it's there and they're going to know it's there. Pretending like it doesn't exist doesn't help it. So I don't know how to transition out of that, but okay, let's talk about Annabelle Joseph, because we're here for Annabelle Joseph week. We're going to play you the second half of Definitely Kinky, but before we get there, let's talk about another book that she wrote called Dark Control. It's the first book in her Dark Dominance series, and we think you guys are going to really like this one. Here's the blurb for Dark Control. Not all fantasies are safe, sane, or consensual. Women, welcome to the world of the gallery. Juliet meets Fort St. Clair on a miserable drunken night and wakes up the next morning cuffed to his guest room bed. Of course, Fort would never take advantage of her. No, the pleasure and pain he wants to inflict on her body must be negotiated in advance, because once Juliet sets foot in his private exclusive dungeon, she belongs to him. BDSM at the gallery is supposed to be a straightforward arrangement, an affair by the rules, but Juliet and Fort's growing connection brings unexpected emotions they can't control. She's the free spirit who transforms his rigid world, and he's the dominant she can finally trust. Or can she? So That sounds really good. That's one of those, that falls under the category of dubious consent that is okay to explore in fiction.
I am totally 100% good with that.
Yeah, that we talked about on Monday about how, obviously in real life, fantasy, not okay. Yeah. In a book, okay.
Fantasy, totally fine.
Totally fine.
Yep.
So let's go ahead and, should we go ahead and throw them into the second
half? Let's give them the last installment before they kill us all because they're just dying from blue balls.
Okay, here's the second installment, or the final installment of Definitely Kinky by Annabelle Joseph. Enjoy!
Bye.
Bye.
3. Trust. Ruby wasn't much of a poet. But she could have written poetry about the way Ethan leaned his head over her shoulder, his cheek brushing her hair, his breath against her ear, and tied the first knot right over her racing heart. It wasn't a complicated knot. Just a twist and a flip and tucking the tails through. When he finished, he pulled the tails beneath her arms and started another knot behind her back. This one felt more complicated and took more time.
Okay.
He asked as he worked. Yes, I'm good. She wasn't cold, but she felt like shivering as Ethan's fingers moved across her skin. He was going slow, being methodical with the knot, and somehow that turned her on like crazy. When he finished the knot in the back, he touched her shoulder and moved the rope to the front again. She felt the reassuring contact in her pussy in a hot, sudden throb. Why was she so turned on by every small touch? Because of the rope? Or because Ethan was so close to her, creating those knots against her body? The jute's texture wasn't scratchy, but it wasn't smooth either. She supposed that was the great tooth Ethan had talked about.
Do you mind if I?
He paused, then crossed the tails of the rope across her breasts, right over her nipples.
I know a few techniques. Women seem to like how they feel.
Her nipples were hard as rocks, just from the slight pressure. Go for it, she said. He started fashioning a band across her breasts, tying small knots and weaving the jute into an occasional twist. An adjustment, a slight pull, and then he was manipulating her bra's cups, finding her nipples and positioning the rope twists right against them. If her nipples had been naked, the rope would have pinched and definitely hurt. Her pussy throbbed again. Oh my fucking God, she whispered. He paused.
I can undo that if you don't like it.
No, I like it. It's just... She let out a breath as her cheeks burned with secret, growing lust. I think you could get pretty dangerous with these knots of yours. She heard his soft chuckle.
That's kind of the point. Stand still for me, Ruby.
Stand still for me. Gah! The commanding way he said it, and the skilled way he wielded the rope. Another knot and slide, and the rope grew tighter against her skin, against her nipples. Oh, God, help me. She leaned back into him as he created a lattice of rope work against her stomach. Now and again, he retied knots or tugged them to a different place until her shoulders, breasts, and spine felt perfectly contained by rope and perfectly confined. Her voice dropped to a reverent whisper. How long have you been doing this, Ethan?
Rope? Since I first learned about it. I was searching up knots for a Boy Scout badge and stumbled on a bondage video tutorial. I think I was 13.
Have you always tied girls from behind?
It's my preferred way,
he answered.
It feels easier to me. Closer.
I wish you would do me from behind. By some miracle of self-control, she didn't say it, but she wanted to. She was so wet, so freaking turned on. He drew the rope around her waist, the tails growing shorter. Are you almost done? She asked.
Almost. But since we're figuring out if you're kinky or not, let's do this too.
He turned her around so they stood face to face. He didn't tell her to put her hands down at her sides. He just moved them there,
pulling first one wrist and then the other one into the belt he was knotting at her waist. She looked down at herself, at her trapped hands, and back into his striking blue gaze.
That trust thing, he reminded her. Are you doing okay?
I'm... She had no words. I'm... Yeah.
You sure?
She tested her arms. She was really bound, really stuck, unless he decided to release her. Her nipples ached where the rope rested on them, in the very best way.
If you're okay, let's see it all through, he said.
See what all through?
I'll show you. Be still.
With that order, he leaned against the front of her to reach around and knot the rope belt at the small of her back. She leaned her head into the crook of his neck, not quite touching him. She'd known him as a friend, as a talented musician for so many years, but she'd never imagined there was an Ethan like this.
Spread your legs a little,
he said when he finished the knot in the back. She hesitated, then complied. Yes, she was dripping wet, but he probably already knew that. She was practically panting. Part of her was ashamed to be so turned on. This was just a learning experience, wasn't it? But another part of her wanted him to hike her panties up between her pussy lips so she could ride his hand or the rope or anything that could relieve the urgency in her swollen clit. He reached between her thighs and twisted the remaining tails into a knot while she stood, about to pass out from embarrassed horniness. Then he pulled the knot up between her legs. Right between her thighs. She trembled, trying not to moan out loud, but didn't quite manage it.
I can do a trick here, too,
he said. She knew what he meant. He could slide the knot he was working on, adjust it so it rested right against her clit, or maybe even pinched her clit. But that would be too much. It would make her lose her dignity and beg him for animal sex. Please. Better not. She couldn't speak good English right now. He seemed to understand she was reaching the limits of her control. He ought to understand. He was the one who'd pushed her there. He gave her a sympathetic smile and tucked the ends of the rope tightly into the belt, circling the front of her waist.
You're all tied now.
He led her over to the mirror so she could see the lines and patterns he'd made with the knots.
Pretty little package,
he said, rightfully proud of his handiwork.
You can move around if you like. Test the bondage and sensations. You'll feel a pull here and there, which is part of the excitement.
She didn't know if she could take much more excitement. It looks amazing, Ethan. Seriously. It feels amazing. She did as he suggested, squirming in the ropes as far as they'd allow. It became obvious she couldn't undo any of the bondage, not without his assistance. She couldn't even run her hands over the intricate knots, because her wrists were bound to either side of her waist. She arched her back instead, deliriously turned on. I think... Her legs trembled. I think I might have to lie down.
Sure. Let me help you down. Just hold on.
He grabbed the coverlet from the bed and spread it on the carpet. He guided her down and she flowed onto the floor like water. She was that wet. She laid still, feeling the rope hold her, bondage and comfort in one.
Are you okay, Ruby?
He stroked her hair and traced her temples.
Does anything hurt?
Nothing hurts. She closed her eyes. Everything's wonderful. It feels good when you touch me. It feels really, really good.
Do you need me to untie you?
No, please, not yet. He continued to caress her lightly, over the ropes, occasionally pausing to toy with her hair. She opened her eyes a few moments later and came out of her daze to find him leaning over her. His earlier amusement was gone. As was his gentle concern. The look he wore now was something else. Pleased. Predatory. Part desire and part threat. Why haven't you ever touched me before now? She asked, drunk on the sensual game they were playing.
I wanted to, but we were too busy with Mozart and Tchaikovsky.
He let out a soft breath, like he'd been holding it. She'd never seen his eyes look so intense.
Want me to touch you some more?
You said no sex.
Of course, no sex. Touching isn't sex.
His touching felt like sex, but she wasn't going to argue with him. Please touch me some more, Ethan. It feels so good. This all feels so incredible and good. He stroked her hair back from her face, which felt impossibly gentle and sensual. She wanted him to kiss her, but he was Ethan, her quartet friend. Workplace romance was a minefield. What was happening between them? Should they stop? She didn't want to stop. He traced her neck next, and she thought of teeth and biting. His lips moved like maybe he was thinking of it too. Then he trailed his fingertips down to the rope crossing her chest. Her nipples actually pulsed as his fingers circled her breasts. She lay trembling beneath him, a breathless victim.
It wasn't fair of me to do this to you.
He touched the twists of rope that stimulated her nipples.
I knew the effect it would have.
I guess I trusted you. Their eyes met and held as his fingers moved down the lattice of knots to the belt at her waist. If he caressed her any lower, she couldn't let him touch her down there. If he realized she was soaking through his rope, even though she had on her damn llama panties, she'd never get over the embarrassment. She shouldn't have let him tie her below the waist. Now what the hell was she going to do? He was tracing her hips now, that soft but sure touch of a top in control. He was so in control, and her hands were tied along with everything else. I understand now, she said, clenching her thighs together. I get it. She could hardly breathe. She understood so hard.
Should I stop touching you now?
Maybe you should. Not because I don't like it, but because I like it too much, and I'm thinking about crazy things. She sighed, squirming in the rope. Really crazy things. But there's the quartet and everything. A little of the heat left his gaze.
You're right. It might not be good for the quartet, for us to take things too far.
His hand still rested on her hip, his big, talented fingers.
Not that there are any rules or anything,
he pointed out. Maybe unspoken rules, she said.
I wouldn't want anything to come between us as artists, he frowned, or as friends.
He started to untie her as she lay staring at him, at a loss for what to say. All he'd done was decorate her with some rope, and she was about to explode with arousal. What kind of magic was this? The same magic she'd seen at the kinky, joyous reception. She was grateful he'd helped her experience it for herself. Still, she felt mortified when he undid the soaked knot looped between her thighs. He didn't comment. He was in businesslike mode now, as he undid the belt at her waist and pulled the remaining knots apart. He showed her the marks left behind. Even though the rope was gone, the marks still decorated her body. When he freed her hands from her sides, the first thing she did was trace the marks herself. Then she reached to touch his strong, wide shoulders. Thank you, she said.
No, thank you,
he replied, helping her up. He lifted the coverlet from the floor and wrapped it around her shoulders.
Sit on the bed a minute while I get this rope organized. Let the whole experience soak in.
He'd probably used the word soak for a reason. If he was angry, she'd permeated his rope with her rampant pussy juices. He didn't mention it. Just doubled the jute over and around until it was wrapped in the same neat bundle he'd had when he arrived. She waited, huddled in the blanket, as he jammed the rope in his pocket and put his shirt back on. When he sat beside her and put an arm around her shoulder, her heart melted again.
How are you feeling? He asked. Everything okay?
Yes, everything's great. That was fun.
I know a bit more about. She fussed with the blanket, unable to meet his eyes. About why people like kinky stuff so much.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
He pulled her closer, enveloping her in a hug.
I'm going to hold you a minute more, okay? Because we just did a trusting thing.
A trusting thing. He was killing her with his wonderful words. He held her against him, all wrapped up in her blanket. It wasn't as sexy as being wrapped in rope, but it did much more of a number on her heart. She found a way to press her pelvis against the front of his jeans. She couldn't help it. Yes, he'd apparently enjoyed their rope adventure too. Ethan with a hard on. And she was sending him away because they played in a quartet together.
I'm so glad you had fun. I thought you would.
He released her with one last lopsided grin.
See you in the morning, Rube.
He said, standing up to go. See you in the morning. She closed the door behind him and rested her forehead against the glossy wood. Why was she such a coward? She could have let him keep touching her. She should have stayed in his robe under his control to see where things went. She should have trusted him. Shit, the rope was wonderful, but she wanted to do more than rope with him. She needed to do more. She threw on her clothes in record time and left, just remembering to grab her key. She knocked on the door next to hers, waiting for Ethan to answer. Waiting. Waiting. Was he done with her for the night? She breathed a sigh of relief when she heard the lock click. His face appeared. Beautiful, quiet, mysterious Ethan. I want more, she said simply. I have to have more. 4. I need you. Ethan took her hand and pulled her into his room as soon as the door was closed. He trapped her against it and pressed his lips to hers. His fingers threaded in her hair, then moved down to grasp her neck. Not hard enough to choke her, but hard enough to make her press her hips forward with a moan. Ethan, she gasped between kisses.
Thank God you came to me.
I had to. He broke away and led her to his bed. Through the roaring lust in her brain and pussy, she noticed the rope he'd so carefully bundled earlier was spread out in a tangle on top of the sheets. She turned to him, squeezing his hand. What were you doing with that rope, Ethan? He pulled her onto the bed, shoving the rope aside.
I was smelling it.
Oh, wow. He'd just come out and admitted it.
I was about to get naked with it. You smell really good.
You are kinky, aren't you? He laughed.
I think we've established that. But let's talk about you. You're here. You're kissing me.
I told you. I need more.
What about the quartet?
She lifted her chin and met the challenge in his gaze. I don't care right now. She reached for him, shivering as he pulled her closer. I'm trying to care, but I can't. Ethan. He shushed her and held her so tightly she couldn't move. It was like being bound again, only warmer and more exciting. She could feel his cock through his jeans, hard as hell, and hard as her pussy was wet. His lips fastened over hers a second time, and this kiss was aggressive, full of all the animal attraction they denied just minutes ago. He delved a hand between her legs, grasping her pussy through her clothes. She stopped kissing him long enough to groan. Yes, this was what she needed. Do you have to tie me up again? She asked when he let her come up for air. Do you have to tie me up to fuck me?
If I don't tie you up, how will you know who's in control?
He nibbled her bottom lip.
But I might do a less intricate tie this time. Holy fuck, all these clothes.
He started undressing her. She helped for a moment, but then started undressing him instead, so their arms tangled as they wrestled with clothes.
Ruby, he kept murmuring. Ruby, Ruby.
She understood why, because she was thinking the same thing. Ethan, Ethan, I want you so badly. I've played intricate, beautiful music with you for years, but now this.
Look, he said when she lay naked beneath him. They're still there.
He ran his fingers over the pale rope indentations, souvenirs of their earlier play.
You look so beautiful in rope, Ruby. So beautiful without it, too.
She flushed at his words and took in his nakedness with wonder. Those powerful shoulders, that amazing chest, those abs and... Oh my God, she burst out. Ethan, that's your penis? He looked down, gripping it in his fist, a rough, masculine gesture.
Yeah, I've had it all along, all this time.
It's magnificent. He smiled at her, then sucked in a breath when she gingerly touched the head. It was enormous, very hard, very beautiful.
You can hold it if you want,
he said. She wanted to do more than that. She leaned down to kiss it.
Jesus, you're trying to kill me. No, don't stop. Please, don't stop. No, wait.
He took a moment to reach for the rope.
Okay, go for it, beautiful girl.
He didn't have to tell her. She slid down the bed, fully obsessed with his cock now. After she licked around the head, she kissed up the entire impressive length, thinking, Ethan, what in the fucking hell have you been hiding in your pants? While she gave his cock the attention it deserved, she felt him lift one of her wrists and circle it with rope. But it didn't freak her out. It seemed like the natural next step between them. As she licked and moaned, he bound her wrists into tightrope handcuffs, punctuating each knot with a groan or sigh, or another accusation that she was trying to kill him. When he finished with the cuffs, he guided her up to face him and stared into her eyes. The intensity of his gaze made her breath quake.
I'm going to tie your wrists to the headboard now.
He wasn't asking, he was telling.
I'm going to tie you to the bed, and then I'm going to fuck the hell out of you. Sound interesting?
Words were failing her again. She finally got out a raspy, yes, and a request that he use protection.
Of course I will, he assured her. Now lay your ass back on the bed because I need to be inside you.
She laid where he told her and raised her arms over her head so he could loop the tails of the rope around the modern chrome headboard.
This is practically a bondage bed,
he said as he worked.
Bless Miami.
There are bondage beds? She asked. I'm learning so much. Oh, she was learning every astounding thing, like how arresting Ethan could look when he was tying knots to attach her to the bed. When he had her bound the way he wanted, he knelt back to take a look.
I'd love to leave you that way for an hour, he said, just to look at you.
She tugged at the wrist restraints arching her back. No, please.
Squirming makes it even better,
he warned, stroking her leg.
Even more tempting.
You can't leave me like this. Don't you fucking dare. He laughed and went for a condom. It seemed to take an eternity for him to put it on, but it was probably only 10 seconds. He came to the bed and parted her legs with an authority that made her go wetter still.
Do you want me? You want this?
He asked, the stupidest question ever. She was about to die. Yes, I want this. She said, now. He reached to tap the rope.
Don't forget who's boss.
She couldn't possibly forget. He palmed his thick cock, positioning it at her entrance. A sensual movement of his hips, and he was pushing inside, and oh man, he felt so good, so big and powerful that she cried out his name.
Shh,
he said against her ear.
You have to be quiet.
I can't.
Shh.
Ethan stroked her hair as he bottomed out inside her. She moved her hips, squeezing his hard length and arching to slide her clit against his pelvis. It feels so good. How does it feel this good? She gritted her teeth so she wouldn't yell again, but she was afraid she was still talking too loud.
She clamped her lips shut and gave herself up to the incredible dual sensation of rope holding her wrists and Ethan fucking her like a freaking god. It was too much combined with the excitement of struggling. Ethan gazed down at her, his lips set in a line.
Don't pull too hard at the rope.
He reached to still her wrists.
You'll hurt yourself.
I don't care.
I care. Stop pulling so hard or I'll stop fucking you.
She didn't understand how he could be capable of that, but he did stop inside her. She stared up at him, at his stern, handsome features. Please, I'll try to stop pulling. I can't help it.
I knew you'd be trouble.
He wrapped his hands around her wrists, driving into her again. When he was deep, all the way inside, he opened his hands over hers and held them and kissed her. If she'd felt trapped before, she was really trapped now. It was one of the most blissful experiences of her life. Ethan, she cried, only to have his lips descend again. He captured her cries in his mouth as he urged her closer to orgasm. She was so aroused, so crazy turned on, she was almost in pain. Of course, if she'd learned anything that day, it was that pain could bring pleasure. I don't want to come yet, she said, struggling against his hold. I don't want you to stop fucking me yet.
It doesn't have to be a one-time thing, you know.
He laughed and let go of one of her hands to spank the side of her ass. She squeaked and squeezed on his shaft, writhing against him.
Oh, we enjoy being spanked, do we?
He teased.
Good to know.
He spanked her again, and then again on the side of her ass, fucking her all the while. She was definitely, definitely kinky. She gave up all efforts to delay her climax at that point and let her body shiver and shake through the most intense orgasm of her life. Her pussy clenched around his cock as she came and came, gasping his name. Halfway through her orgasm, she realized Ethan was releasing her wrists. Instead of yanking at the rope and hurting her wrists, she was able to throw her arms around his shoulders and bury her face against his neck. She restrained herself from biting him, barely, as she enjoyed the spectacle of his orgasm. He twitched and groaned and pounded her pussy so hard her legs flew to the sides. Don't let go of me, she begged when he came to rest. Not yet. He pressed his cheek to hers.
No, not until you're ready.
He braced himself over on his elbows, which she appreciated, because she could hold him close without being crushed. He smelled so good, so familiar. That was the thing about fucking a longtime friend. She knew so many things about him already, and now she knew this. While she drifted in her thoughts, the main one being that Ethan was good at fucking, he kissed her forehead and her eyes and her lips whenever he could get to them.
I knew you'd be trouble,
he teased. I'm not trouble.
Look at me.
She gazed into his eyes. The blue was so intense when they were that close. I can't look at you, she said. You're too handsome. He smiled and kissed her, a long, demanding, possessive kiss.
I've been handsome all this time, and you never noticed.
Oh, I noticed. She let him go, then flicked a glance down at his cock as he pulled out to remove the condom.
I just never knew the rest. Well, I only show the rest to women I think will appreciate it.
Ruby sighed. I appreciated it very, very much. He lay back beside her and pulled her into his arms, and she rested her head on his shoulder. He sighed and stroked her long, straight hair.
I've wanted to do this for so long.
Sleep with me?
Well, yes, but also play with your hair. It's so long and silky. I've wanted to brush it forever.
I hate brushing it, she said with a laugh. You can brush it for me anytime.
Cool. I'll hold you to that.
The rope somehow had ended up beside her, and after he finished playing with her hair, he picked it up and used the end of it to caress her shoulder and stomach and the tips of her breasts. I can't, no. She pushed his hand away. Not yet, 5 minutes.
5 minutes already?
He looked amused and pleased. I might be up to that challenge.
I imagine you are. Jesus, I never suspected you were so good at being kinky. I've never known any kinky people before.
The rope's caress was replaced by leisurely fingertips.
Oh, you know kinky people, he chuckled. Trust me, you know more of them than you think.
She lifted her head to look at him. What does that mean? Who do I know?
I'm not saying. Come here, beautiful girl. I still have about 4.5 minutes to kiss you before we go again.
She rolled into his embrace, lifting her chin. This is way nicer than spending the night alone in a boring hotel room.
Way nicer. And I've still got plenty of interesting things I want to do to you.
Ruby wouldn't have believed that a day or two ago, but now. She ran her fingers over the rope marks on her wrists as Ethan pulled her closer. Now, everything had changed. 5. Private collaboration. Ruby woke from a sex-soaked dream of Ethan and the Tchaikovsky piece they'd played at the reception. It was hard to remember what was part of her dream and what was real. They'd gone at it 3 times last night, until neither of them could muster up the strength for more. Ruby had learned that she liked belt spanking, extreme nipple stimulation, and bondage. She learned that oral sex could be more than routine foreplay, and that she could actually come from doggy style. It had been the best night of her life, sex-wise, and that was a wonderful thing. But now that it was morning, reality was setting in. Ethan stirred beside her.
Ruby?
He reached for her hand.
What time is it?
I don't know. She turned to grab her phone and squinted at it. It's almost 8. He sat up on one elbow.
What's wrong?
What do you mean, what's wrong?
I know you. I know how your voice sounds when you're upset.
She shook her head. I'm not upset.
That's exactly what you say when you're upset.
Fine. She blew out a breath and turned to him in bed. You do know me, Ethan, because we're in a quartet together and we have this working relationship.
Yeah, sure. None of that has to change.
But what if it does? She buried her head in her hands. I was just dreaming about how wonderful you are and all the things you taught me. Last night was so wonderful.
And?
And I wouldn't trade the experience for anything, but the Gold Quartet is my whole life. My entire life, Ethan. What if what we did last night ruins it?
Oh, would it ruin it?
We had crazy hot sex lots of times. It's going to change things. She lifted her head and let out a groan. How could it not change things between us? And when things change between us, things might change between the whole group. My years with the Gold Quartet have been the best years of my life. I never imagined I'd be able to make a living as a musician, much less have fun and travel and make such awesome friends. Her voice broke with emotion, and Ethan pulled her into his arms so she could rest against his warmth. She felt as confused this morning as she'd been horny last night.
So you're worried about the quartet?
He asked.
About the 4 of us breaking up if you and I start a relationship?
Yes. Even now, I feel like too much has changed.
Nothing's changed.
He made her look up at him.
We've had a relationship all this time. It's just a little spicier now. And seriously, nothing will ever change my respect for you as a musician and a quartet member.
It might change their opinion. You know how Jonathan can be.
Jonathan can get over himself. He only gets snappy because he's had a crush on you for all these years.
She gaped at him. What?
You really are clueless, aren't you?
The sting of his words was immediately soothed away by a kiss, and another kiss.
Don't worry about them,
he said when he released her.
Jonathan and Steve don't have to know. We don't have to tell them.
Whether we tell them or not, shit happened between us. It was magical and magnificent shit, but still, I can't risk losing the quartet.
She hated arguing with him after the fun they'd had last night and the way he'd kissed her just now. But friend groups drifted apart when the members got into relationships. She'd seen it happen so many times. Please, Ethan, I just feel scared.
I don't want you to be scared.
He sat up on the edge of the bed.
Last night was such a powerful thing. I get what you're saying about the quartet, but I don't like it.
She leaned against his back and stroked his tousled hair. Thank you for showing me all that beautiful, perverted stuff. But if I ask you to show me again, like tonight or something, you should probably say no.
I won't want to say no,
he said in a gruff voice. But the quartet.
Fine, the quartet.
He was pretending to be angry, but she knew he loved the quartet as much as she did. She knew he saw her point.
I guess we'd better get up, he said. John gets bitchy when we miss the shuttle. But before that,
he pulled her into his arms.
One last kiss, and you better make it a good one.
All your kisses are good ones, she thought as he claimed her lips. After a quick shower, Ruby made it downstairs with a few minutes to spare. To her chagrin, she saw Ethan had just arrived in the lobby too. Steve and Jonathan watched as they took seats across from each other. Ruby pretended to check her luggage tag and hoped her blush didn't show.
So, did you two sleep well?
There was an edge to Jonathan's question that made Ruby look up. But she looked at Steve, not Jonathan. Steve was always up front with her, and his expression said it all.
My room was on the other side of Ethan's,
he said with a shrug.
And the walls aren't as soundproof as you probably thought.
She and Ethan looked at each other, but neither of them seemed willing to talk first.
It doesn't matter,
said Jonathan as the silence strung out.
You're both adults, right? Hope you had fun.
The edge was still evident in his voice, but Jonathan had a prickly personality, so it wasn't surprising. As for a secret crush, as Ethan claimed, that flat out couldn't be true. Ethan and I did have fun. She felt she owed it to her friend to announce this to the group. We had a lot of fun.
Seriously, a lot of fun,
Ethan echoed. But we also agreed it might mess with the quartet's dynamic if we started a relationship. So, last night was a one-time thing. We're going to be friends who slept together once.
Well, more than once, kids, Steve said, according to what I heard.
He flicked them a thumbs up.
Got kind of excited myself.
Jonathan rolled his eyes.
Good God, let's not hash over what you heard again.
Again? Asked Ruby. Jonathan frowned at her.
I had to sit here and listen to the play-by-play while we waited for you two to come down. It's up to you guys if you want to keep your whatever going. But yeah, it could affect the quartet, and that'd be a shame.
I don't want it to affect the quartet, Ruby said, although Ethan's lips stayed mashed shut. The shuttle van arrived a moment later, saving them from the awkward conversation. Ruby climbed to the back bench with her violin case, and Ethan took the seat in front of her. When Steve and Jonathan struck up a conversation, Ethan leaned to the side and stared out the window. Ruby gazed at the back of his neck, at the curly, dark hair she'd clutched in the throes of ecstasy. Damn. No matter how they'd tried to spin the morning after, things still felt wrong. They'd made this shuttle trip to the airport 100 times, and she usually enjoyed a feeling of ease and accomplishment the morning after a travel gig. But today, she felt unsettled and horribly confused. After a bout with traffic and an extra long line at security, they barely got their instruments checked on time. They were so late to the gate that they couldn't get seats together. Normally, Ruby hated being separated from the guys. But today, it was a relief. Damn Ethan for being so hot and seductive, and damn her for giving in to his marvelously kinky talents. She sat hunched between two businessmen, trying not to remember all the fun she'd had with him, and trying not to turn and look at him a few rows back. He might smile his famous smile, that low-key, mysterious smile that had bloomed into so many more things the night before. She said aloud. One of the businessmen beside her moved toward the window a couple inches, like she was complaining about the space. Well, she needed the extra room for her regrets. She closed her eyes, wishing she could sleep on planes because she definitely hadn't gotten her 8 hours in. Just as the white noise of flight started to relax her, her phone buzzed in her lap, showing a text from Ethan.
This is bullshit, Ruby.
Damn him. She covered her eyes with her hands and barely restrained herself from saying, ugh, again. She had to be strong. The Gold Quartet had to come first. It's not bullshit, she typed back. I explained why we have to keep things out of the bedroom. You agreed.
I agreed because it seemed like the gentlemanly thing to do in the moment, but I was lying.
She wished she had the balls to turn around and beg him across the three rows of seats to stop. She was barely holding onto her willpower, her resolve. You can still brush my hair if you want, now and again. He answered her text quickly.
I want to do more than brush your hair.
I can't risk the quartet, she typed. Already things feel different.
That's all in your head. Jonathan and Steve know, and they don't care.
Stop yelling at me by text.
I'm not yelling. This would be yelling.
He wrote in all caps. She didn't dignify his caps lock with an answer. She hated that everything he'd done to her was caps lock in her memory, screaming in her mind, that was the best sex you've ever had. Her phone buzzed again, and she dreaded looking down.
Maybe it will be harmful to the quartet to deny our feelings for each other,
he texted. It's just horniness, she typed back. We have to be disciplined.
I'd be happy to discipline you. You little minx.
She shielded her screen so the businessmen couldn't read over her shoulder. Stop, Ethan. Don't type that stuff to me when I'm on a plane.
Fine, but we're going to talk more about this later,
he typed, and she could hear his quiet, commanding tone in the sentence. Jesus, she said, tucking her phone beside her. The guy on the other side of her tried to make space. These poor dudes. Don't mind me, she said. She rubbed her eyes. I'm just freaking out.
About what?
The guy by the window asked.
Fair flying?
She thought a moment. No, worse than that. Fear of being an idiot.
That's a big one,
said the guy on the aisle.
But if it makes you feel any better, people are idiots all the time.
The guy by the window scowled at him, like he wasn't helping, but it did help a little. People were idiots all the time, especially when it came to lizard brain things like attraction and sex. By the time the plane landed, she'd convinced herself that, yeah, she and Ethan had made an impulsive mistake, but they could recover by not being idiots.
It was a good trip, guys,
Steve said as they left the terminal to find their cars.
Better for some of us than others,
Jonathan muttered.
Sorry again for the unexpected sexual activity at the reception,
Steve went on, ignoring him.
The clients gave us a big tip, so I'm not too put out. It was a good trip,
said Ethan, looking at Ruby. His gaze singled her out.
I know you rode here with Steve, but can I drive you home?
She began.
That would be great, actually.
Steve said.
I've got some errands to run.
He and Jonathan took off, leaving her to hitch a ride in Ethan's car. She frowned at Steve's retreating figure. He wasn't going to run any errands on the way home. He'd never leave his cello unattended in his car. He'd done this on purpose. Are you guys scheming behind my back? She asked as Ethan unlocked his car.
No, not scheming. I need to talk to you, like I said. Get in.
He put his viola case in the back seat, but Ruby held her instrument in her lap, maybe to use as a shield, so his sexy vibes couldn't reach her pussy and make her lose control. You're taking this so personally, she said as they got on the road.
and you're not being honest. He shot back at her. You want this as much as me, and you're being chicken shit. Why?
Did you call me chicken shit?
You're scared of our artistry getting pushed aside for other feelings, but it doesn't work that way. You inspire me more now than ever before.
If you just want to bang me again.
Don't.
His voice cut her off, hot, sudden anger.
Don't talk to me about banging you. That's not what it was.
She turned to the window, giving him her back. Why were they fighting? Why was she being chicken shit when he was willing to take a chance? She closed her eyes and held onto her violin case until he pulled up in front of her apartment. He put the car in park, and she could feel him staring over at her. I'm going to leave now. She wouldn't look at him because that would be disastrous. I'm not going to cry.
I don't want you to cry. Don't cry, please.
I'm not.
Fuck, you're crying.
He was right. She was crying. She started bawling a moment later because of all the emotions she couldn't figure out. And he was reaching across the seat to hold her because he was Ethan and he was her wonderful longtime friend. He let her cry, stroking her hair and rubbing her shoulder. Then they were kissing, and he was licking the tears from her cheeks and lips. I love you so much, she cried between kisses. Not just the sex, I love everything about you, but I love the quartet too.
I know, same, but we can have both, I promise. I'd never put our working relationship in jeopardy.
He drew back and made her look at him.
You know that, right?
She nodded, letting go of his shoulders long enough to wipe away some tears. Maybe, if we're careful, the occasional private collaboration wouldn't hurt.
Private collaboration? I like that.
His blue eyes glinted and his lips curved the tiniest bit.
I wouldn't mind starting on this private collaboration right away. Should I park the car and come inside?
Just to clarify, I'm not talking about a viola and violin duet, she said.
Neither am I, baby.
They took their instruments inside and laid them next to each other on her table and headed for her bedroom to continue what they'd started in the car. He pushed her back on her quilt and used his body to hold her down instead of rope, and it was even more exciting somehow, having him in her home, where they'd hung out as friends so many times. Please don't wait. Don't tease me, she said, groping in her side table drawer for a rubber. He knelt over her to put it on, giving her a stern stare that made her pussy throb.
After all your crying and complaining, I'm inclined to make you wait as a punishment, but I won't.
He surged inside her instead, lifting her hips from the bed with the intensity of his desire. When she grabbed handfuls of his hair to ground herself, he captured her fingers and imprisoned them in his fists. She felt closest to him when he was holding her down. Please, more, she begged. It feels so perfect. He complied, playing her with as much skill as his instrument. Perfect power, perfect friendship, and a magnificent climax.
I want more of you tomorrow.
He whispered in her ears. She trembled.
And the next day, and the next. I want to collaborate all the time.
She thought that would be wonderful, and told him so with a long, surrendering kiss. Later, when they were all fucked out and limp with satisfaction, he made her sit in his lap so he could brush her hair. He was so careful, so slow and affectionate as he tamed her long, tangled locks. She realized with a sudden burst of insight that he was right, that everything would be okay between them. They could be friends, lovers, and musicians, because he cared enough to brush her knotted hair without hurting her. Like everything between them, it was a trusting thing. She tipped her head back, and he bit her neck as Tchaikovsky played in her memory, all the notes sounding wonderfully right.
And we're back.
How about that ending?
Oh my God.
I can't wait to hear this in audio. You know, we're doing this, you know, we record ahead of time so we don't get to hear the audio. I'm so pumped to hear this in audio.
It's really funny too. Like, the way they interact with each other, the characters, is so snappy and witty. It made me so happy. And it's obvious that she knows about classical music. And so that was really a theme in it. And it was beautiful. Thank you, Annabelle Joseph, for giving us this lovely gem of a book.
Thank you so much.
So nice. I love it. She's giving away a $25 Amazon gift card and an official Fannabelle t-shirt.
I want that t-shirt so bad. That pun is killing me.
It's so clever.
It's so clever, but it's also adorable.
Adorable.
It's so adorable.
So go to readmeromance.com and go to, I think it's on the homepage this week. And if you're listening to it after this week, it'll be under past audiobooks. But you can enter her giveaway this week for the for that cool t-shirt and the gift card. Check out Annabelle's Rough Love series. The first book is Torment Me. Or check out her Dark Dominant series. The first book is Dark Control. Those are if you're looking to dive into the world of Annabelle Joseph, we're suggesting you start with those two books. Go get your BDSM on, everybody. And that's it for this week. Megan Quinn has a book out today called The Dugout, right?
Okay.
Yes. We'll be back next week with, I think it's me. Okay, so next week on the podcast is the Football Pants Chronicles.
Yes! This is the fan fiction! I'm actually really excited about this.
It's really going to be cute.
We've talked about it a while.
It's a last minute substitution, and I didn't have time to write anything, so I pulled out some fan fiction I wrote about football player J.J. Watt. A couple of years ago.
You talked about this a while back on the podcast, though, and people were like, why? Where? When?
I know.
They're like, I have to have this. We had them vote in the headquarters, because you have two fan fictions. You have this one, you have Stuart Reardon.
I have David Gandy.
David Gandy. Okay, yeah. Sorry, male model, David Gandy.
So, and that might be coming in season 4. I don't know. This is really cute and sexy, real sexy. And I love J.J. Watt to pieces. Like, I went live in my Facebook group, Bailey's Babes, when he proposed to his girlfriend. Because I was like, you guys, this has been so long in coming. Every time they go on vacation, we'll be like, is he gonna do it? Is he going to propose? So this is my fan fiction about J.J. Watt. It's really cute.
I love it.
So be there or be square. Okay. And that's it for this week. Does anybody have anything else? All right. Leah, tell them what to do.
Fuck your day up. Make stay your bitch. Don't be a dick.
Bye.
Read me romance. Read me romance.